thank you for tuning in and being a part of our world this evening. As we approach Halloween, we're bringing the spooky, talking to survivors, veterans of three of the most famous hauntings in American history. From Amityville, Christopher Lutz is with us. From The Haunting in Connecticut, Carmen Snedeker is here. And also from The Conjuring, Andrea Perrin. They are all on hand with us this evening. And as I mentioned, you'll hear me refer to Carmen as Carmen Reed, Carmen Snedeker, Christopher Lutz, Christopher Quarantino. Just to give you a little background, again, if you're just tuning in, Christopher Lutz was his adopted name when stepfather George took over for a while to separate himself from that. When he was growing up, he went back to his birth name, Quarantino. So that is interchangeable. You'll understand that as we go along. And Carmen Reed was Carmen Snedeker at the time of the haunting in Connecticut and has since had life changes that have precluded her changing her name as well. Andrea Perrin, still Andrea Perrin and part of the world with us here and easy to follow along, but I just wanted to keep everybody on the same path. Tonight, we'll be taking your calls for the next couple of hours. If you have questions, concerns about the paranormal, you're having your own experience and would like to share them with us, we'd love to hear from you. Quick email. During the last segment when we were all chatting, you mentioned that that the demons and these things will attack people. And it seems to come after religious people. Why do you think that is? Why is it that we hear about demons latching on to cause harm to those people that are religious and spiritual? Shouldn't they be the most protected? And why do we not hear it really happening to people that are you know, don't have a belief system or don't necessarily follow any theology? And maybe we'll start off with you, Christopher. Why do you think that that happens to people that are Christian based and seem to be the ones that should be the most protected?
Well, I believe we're called of the Lord. And some of us still have our ticket. And they want to cash it before you use it.
So you think it's because of your affiliation and your connection to God that that's what makes you more desirable to these entities and beings?
That's the conclusion I came to.
And do you find that same thing in your research and understanding of all of this, Andrea, that it's because of your affiliation in the churches and belief systems that that's why your family is so appealing to the other side, to the dark side, if you will?
You know, I really wish that I could answer that question with, you know, some semblance of authority, and I can't. To this day, I just turned 58 years old, and I don't know any more than I did when I was 12 in terms of why our family was targeted. But I do feel that in our case, there was some familial connection between the spirits in the house. And even though there was no actual ancestral connection between our family, I had an experience in the house that leads me to believe that, and my mother even said, you're the reason that we bought this house. Because I encountered a spirit in the house that was a mirror image or reflection of myself, dressed in clothes from the 1700s, who looked identical to me as an old woman, and I found that shocking, but I also found it in some way comforting. It seemed to explain something to me, and I don't know if it is reincarnation or what it is exactly, but that's the only place in my whole life that I've ever had a sense of being home, and it broke my heart to sell the farm.
Carmen, you had talked about the fact that you, even after all this time, there's still this thread that connects you to that entity and that you can feel the pull from time to time. One of our listeners wrote in, Kimberly from Connecticut, who says that she accidentally made connection with that other side. The three homes she's lived in have been very haunted and very active. And she's bothered both in physical form and in dream form. Her question is, do you think once that door is open, does that affect your soul? Will that affect your outcome in the future with heaven and hell and or wherever we go to because that door has been open and you've made that connection?
If you deliberately made that connection, you can always take it back. There's always a way to undo something. You cannot take that thread off of you, but what you do with it, you can improve your karma. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about why saints and people of religious backgrounds are attacked. It's because, have you ever heard of the story of Job? The entity wants to separate us from the Creator, whatever you want to call that Creator. He wants to separate us from that Creator and keep us from connecting. And that's why the closer you try to connect, or the harder you try to connect, the more the negative comes in and tries to prevent that connection. Because that connection brings light into this world. Each of us that bring light into this world improve the world. And each of us that bring darkness into the world darken the world. Now, I know that's hard to follow, but it's absolutely the truth.
Yeah, that,
speaking
that
with
sounds
that thought on the book of Job,
yes,
the job of the devil in that instance was to get Job to curse God.
Right.
And once he had
him away,
it takes the protection off of Job.
Mm-hmm. And you know that it kind of with that advice that you give of, you know, once you've made that connection, it's always there. You'll always be a part of it, but it's which direction you choose to go forward with, which sounds like the old parable of the grandfather talking to his grandson and says, there are two wolves inside of each of us, and they're constantly at war. You've got the good wolf. You've got the bad wolf. You've got the good wolf representing kindness, bravery, and love. You've got the bad wolf, which represents things like greed, hatred, and fear. And the grandson asks him, you know, grandfather, how do we know which one wins? And the grandfather tells him, it's the one you feed most. So if you have had this connection, if you continue to feed to that dark side, if you continue to give to that entity, it's going to feed, it's going to get larger, and it will get stronger. If you turn it off, if you go to the light, if you take yourself away from what you're doing, that's what will change and impact your life. Once you change the things you look at, the things you look at will begin to change. We have to take a quick break. We'll open up with your phone calls when we return. I'm Dave Schrader, your host for the evening, and this is Coast to Coast AM. We're back here on Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. We're talking with three veterans of extreme paranormal activity. And if you have been around watching the pop culture of the last 20 to 30 years, you will recognize each one of our guests from their stories. From Amityville, Christopher Lutz, the youngest boy from that family, is here with us this evening. Carmen Reed, Carmen Snedeker from the Haunting in Connecticut case, and from The Conjuring, the real-life story, we have Andrea Perrin joining us as well. We're opening up phone lines, and again, I just encourage you and remind you, if you're going to call in with your own stories to share this evening, your own questions, please be respectful and mindful of our guests and the time that they're giving us as well, and we'll have a great time this evening. Let's begin our journey with Wildcard Line 4, Teresa in Boulder, Colorado. Welcome to Coast AM.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Thank you for calling this evening. Who did you have a question for, or are you having your own experience?
Whoever said that, you know, the only way that you can close the door, or you can't close the door to these entities, she said you have to accept it. And I take exception to that because I believe that acceptance is different than submission. What they want is your submission to the entities.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where you get in trouble. But you can close the door. You cannot submit to them. And you can live your life in your own particular reality. And if it's Christian, that's just fine. That's great, actually. But
I
we are...
You can close those closing. Through the power of the Word of God and the power that's in the name of Jesus Christ.
Yes.
But what he was saying is that you cannot remove the door.
Is it what
right,
I was
you,
saying?
Thank you, Teresa. We appreciate the call. Go ahead, Chris.
Yes, Teresa, great question. I really feel that, you know, when I was speaking of that door being opened, I'm talking about people that are going around opening these things. They barely even know how to open it. They don't know how to close it. So I'm not saying that it cannot be closed. I'm saying that the people that are don't know how to close it. So it gets left open until somebody cleans up that mess.
Right, and that's why it's so important. You know, I'm getting question after question. I won't just put it to one person because I must have a dozen questions here regarding things like the Ouija board. And do you really believe the Ouija board is evil and that just having one is going to create all kinds of anarchy and chaos in your life? But I kind of feel like it's the same thing. If you know what you're doing in communication, if you know what you're how you're doing things and you know how to shut things down, there's a lot less opportunity for negative things to attach. But I'm curious, because it is such a big hot button in the field of the paranormal, quickly on each one of your parts, and we'll start with you, Andrea, what is your take on something like a Ouija board? Do you believe that it is something that is just inherently evil and negative?
No, I don't. I think that it's plastic and cardboard. And I think that it is the infusion of energy and the concentrated effort of the thought process by those who are around it. It could be a stale orange that everybody was concentrating their energy on and calling forth, opening the door to the other side, and the same would result. But speaking to your earlier question, I want people to know that in terms of my family experience, when things were in crisis and chaos in that house, the one and only one thing that would stop it dead in its tracks was imploring the assistance of God. God help me. Those three words would bring it to a complete halt instantaneously. And that worked every single time. So that was one thing that the Lorraine Warren taught us that was extremely useful to us. But in terms of Ouija, tarot cards, you know, she always said, don't bring anything into this house that has anything to do with the dark arts. And she had fear about that. But in subsequent years, she too started using the Ouija board and started using other methods of contact because she felt so protected that she could, and she felt that she knew what she was doing in terms of opening and then shutting it back down. I don't put much credence into the whole idea that there's anything evil about any particular item. Although I do think that I never used to believe this until I really spoke with John Zaffis at length about it. I didn't think that attachments could form to objects, but I've changed my view on that.
All right. What about you, Chris? Do you think that tools like the Ouija board are going to do nothing but wreak unnecessary havoc in your life?
Well, I think it's more dangerous than the hammer that's sitting in my toolbox. You know, nothing happens as a result of that hammer until I started using it. And now when you kick it up a notch and you call it a gun and you start playing with that gun, it's roulette, man.
Right. If you're in the hands of anybody, a tool can be dangerous, right?
Yeah. And I won't jack with it. But that's what it is. It's a tool.
For Carmen,
something that it's
right.
designed to open those ports.
And where do you stand on it, Carmen? Do you believe that that is a place of just plain stay away from, or do you think, again, it's how the intention is behind it that's going to denote whether it goes horribly bad or relatively good?
I think in the wrong hands, as Chris was saying, any tool can be a weapon. Now, what I was talking about is communicating with something. Now, there's a tool that you can use and communicate with the spirit world. Now, let me ask you this. How do you know that they're telling you the truth? I mean, you can't look in their eyes, you can't look in their face, you can't judge by their body language whether they're lying to you. Are they really who they're saying they are?
Right, it's a cautionary tale.
Yes.
Yeah, you have to be careful.
Unless you know absolutely how to close that door, you don't need to play with stuff like that, especially young people. They are so susceptible to the spirit world. The prepubescent, especially. They can see things that we can't see. They can hear things that we can't hear. And they don't need to be given a Ouija board.
All right. We've a quick question, Andrea, from email form. Karen says, I've read your book. I'm on my second time of going through it. Andrea, has Lorraine Warren ever returned your mother's journal?
No.
All right. Well, you got your answer. Let's go. Let's see here. I don't want to go to another call and have to cut it short. So we'll kind of keep on this thought and dealing with our guests as we're chatting about their experiences with the paranormal and opening these lines of communication. Do you ever, any one of you, do you ever get the itch to reach out and ask if they're still there or see, or do you just inherently know or feel when there are things that are off in your life?
Is that to any one of us, or?
Yeah, we'll kind of going down the line, just in a quick answer, Carmen, do you know when there's something not right around you, or?
Absolutely. I can feel a human spirit, I can feel an elemental, I can feel an angel, and they all feel different. Now, you have children. When you're working at your desk and one of your children, this is an analogy I like to use, when one of your children walk into that room, you know who it is without turning around, do you not?
Right.
You feel their energy. The same thing with the spirit world. I can tell a human spirit opposed to an inhuman spirit. And I could also the smaller spirits, the elementals, the angelic are always with me. I mean, I can feel spirits out in the mall where nobody else can. So, yes.
All right. What about you, Chris? Chris, did we lose you? All right. Let's go. Andrea, we'll give you a chance at that question.
I'm completely, utterly surrounded at all time by spirit, completely, utterly surrounded at all time by extraterrestrials. It's a part of my life. It's perfectly normal to me, and I do accept it, and I do embrace it because I don't let anything dark near me. I learned long ago that there is pure, unadulterated evil in the world, and I deliberately choose to live in the light. It's an intention, and it's a choice.
All right, and Chris, we've got you back on the line here. I'm sorry we're having a little bit of trouble with the phone lines tonight. But what about you? I mean, do you ever reach out to see if there's still something there, or can you just sense when you've got something popping in around you that doesn't belong?
Well, I think there's a thing called discernment, and sometimes you're walking in better amount of discernment than others. And there's been times in my life where those things are present and I know it. Other times I believe that they've been there and I wasn't discerning of it. And then other times I think things are okay. So, no, I don't go seeking out whether they're there. Once they are there, it becomes evident at some level.
Well, I know you don't go really seeking the paranormal anymore, but does it still seem to find you? Okay, so you still got it in one way, shape, or another, visiting and being a part of your life.
There's some pretty crazy stories, and we don't get a chance to get into them, so I won't get started on them, but yes.
All right, when we come back, we will ask. I've got a lot of people questioning, and we'll take your phone calls, but a lot of people are questioning, what do you believe was the instigation for the activity that took place in Amityville, Chris? Why do you think that George was more involved in this? And for those people that haven't heard your interview before, we'll give you a chance to chime in on that a little bit when we return from our break. This evening, we're talking with extreme paranormal survivors from Amityville, Haunting in Connecticut, and The Conjuring. And again, if you have questions, you can email them to me at dave@darknessradio.com. You can call in and share your encounters if you're going through something now, and we'll see if our veteran panel can weigh in and maybe give you some advice on what you're dealing with. So keep tuned in. We've got a lot more show to cover with you this evening. This is the best in overnight talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader, and you're listening to Coast AM. Welcome back to the show. We're taking your calls for the remainder of the show with our guests. If you have your own paranormal encounter you'd like to share or questions for our guests regarding theirs, you can certainly be a part of our show, or you can continue to email me your questions. I'll try to weave them through throughout the show at dave@darknessradio.com. Dave@darknessradio.com. We'll talk with Chris Lutz in a few minutes about why he believes his stepfather might be more of why the activity took place in the house. We'll do that in a second, but let's go to Wildcard Line 5. Philadelphia is calling in. Dennis, welcome to the show.
Good morning, folks. Hi.
Hi, what question do you have for our guests this evening?
Okay, yeah, when my family first moved into this house in 2000, you know, I mean, it was basically geared toward me. All hell broke loose in here. I mean, we were actually thinking about selling it 6 months after moving in. But then I called up some paranormal investigators. They said, you know, as quickly as it started, it can also stop, which it did. But periodically, it still makes itself known that it's here. You know, the scratches and the things missing, vanishing, reappearing. And, well, there's one instance which I'd like to run by your guest to find out what this was, because it wasn't a spirit. This is what happened. I laid down on the floor. You know how when you lay down on the floor, your dog comes running. You know they love it when you're on the floor with them. You know, they lick your face and everything.
Right.
Well, I laid down on the floor, and my dog was laying to my right in front of me, and she wasn't running over to me, and she had this strange, really strange, eerie look on her face. Well, I was calling to her. She got up and slowly walked on my right toward me. Well, she didn't come to me. She walked around me. Now, I was waiting for her to come out to my left, which she wasn't doing. I sat up. I turned around to my left. She wasn't there, and I'm calling to her. Here comes my real dog, come running down the steps and running on top of me and licking me and everything. So what was that that it was now taking shape?
What do you guys, Christopher, do you have any idea on this? I mean, you've certainly had a lot of activity and insights on this. What do you think might have been going on?
I don't know, man. Doppelganger dog? I don't know. What do you call that? That's outside of my experience.
All right. Andrea, do you have any insight on something like that?
Well, that's out of my realm of experience as well, but I can tell you that when we lived at the farmhouse, we saw numerous spirit animals in the house. We had a cat that used to run through a wall where there used to be a door. And we had a dog that we saw in the barn and that we also saw in the house several times. But it never manifested in full form. It was more of a shadow figure. So I don't really know exactly how to quantify or qualify that experience, other than I would say that it was paranormal in nature.
All right. Thank you very much for calling in and being a part of the show. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back and get a little insight from Christopher Lutz. Why has this house been so important in history with the haunting, and why has nobody really had an experience since then? Did George Lutz open a door? And if so, how? We'll continue with that conversation right after this. We're back on Coast to Coast AM. Here's kind of a two-part question for Chris Lutz. Chris, if you could answer this. First of all, a lot of people want to know, first off, do you believe that Butch DeFeo, that his actions were because of paranormal activity, or do you just think this was a drug addict that made a really horrible choice?
I think in his intoxicated state, he may have been influenced by something.
Okay, so yeah. You're open to that possibility.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the aspect of what happened in this house, why, you know, we've heard so many things, and people automatically assume, as we mentioned in the beginning of the show, that the haunting occurred because of the brutal murder of the DeFeo family in that house, and that it was possibly their ghosts and tormented souls that were haunting the house. You and your family don't believe it had really anything to do with the DeFeo family. So what do you think caused this rift to open? What caused this supernatural activity to begin in the house in Amityville?
Well, let me touch back upon whether or not our family believes that there was any, or let me not speak for my family, I'll just speak for myself here.
Okay.
Because I'm really separating myself from the story most people have heard. In one of the earlier segments, for the folks that are just tuning in, you know, this story was told in such a manner where there was a hero and a victim, and that everything was just caused by the house. And so let me start from there and just say that there are some major differences between what you've been told and the way it really happened. From my perspective, as somebody part of the family, the story that wasn't told is that with what George was doing, and let me touch on what he was doing so that you got a clearer picture. They speak in the first book about my parents' involvement in a thing called Transcendental Meditation. And that stems from an Eastern-style religion where you sit in a specific pose, and what you're going to do is you're going to open your chakras, and these are the energy centers on your body, and you're going to repeat a word over and over. Once you get into a meditative state, you're gonna relax and let the spirit flow. And then you're going to repeat a word over and over again. And that word that you're repeating is actually the name of a spirit. And in doing the mantra, where you repeat it over and over again, you're seeking to pull that spirit into yourself through your chakras. And it was a rave at the time. A lot of people were practicing it. I'm not trying to slam Transcendental Meditation. It's a different belief than mine. Generally, when you do Transcendental Meditation, you're supposed to be calling things into you that are positive. And there's different names. They have different gods that each specifically remedy a certain thing that your body's needing. But what George was calling upon is not on the recommended list. In fact, he wouldn't have known that name without knowing about the occult and calling on this dark thing.
So again, he was requesting assistance or power from a dark entity. That was part of his mantra.
Yes.
And you believe that's what opened this rift that might have already been there as an undercurrent, but it was his focus of bringing this out that is what caused his subsequent possession and the horrific nature of the haunting that took place in Amityville.
Right, and so when we went, it went with us.
And that is why, to this day, nobody has really had experiences in that house since.
Yes.
All right, and just so people do know, both Kathy and George Lutz did go through an exorcism. So they did continue to battle this and wage this war after they left the house in Amityville, and they took it very seriously, and it took its toll on them physically, mentally, and as a family. So this wasn't just they got out of there, cashed in their chips, and they were done. This story wore down the fabric of who they all were, and this took a much greater debt than people really understand, I think. Let's go east of the Rockies, Charles in Texas. Welcome to the show.
Yes. Hi. My question relates to more I find the question related to how people, you know, people ask, well, why are Christians, for example, or good Christians or good people, you know, why are they sort of attacked and stuff? And I would say, just. The night before my dad was murdered, and that's another story there. We'll talk about that some other day. But the thing is, the night before my dad was murdered, we had a very sadistic caller. I don't know how in the world that happened, but whoever was called, and it was this really evil kind of a laugh. I mean, it sounded almost like supernatural, really. I tracked it down to some place in Pennsylvania, a haunted area of Pennsylvania. But the thing is, the one thing about these evil or evil spirits or whatever it may be, is that they're sadistic. They take pleasure in bothering you. So if you're not going, if you just refuse to react to them, like a lot of Christians will react to spirits by being bothered, you know, and if you can stay calm. And you can stay in that sense of love, you know, the loving spirit, I think. Because that's what the spirits want, these evil spirits, they want to, that sadism is to also...
Right, they want to devalue and break you down. Thank you for calling in, Charles. I get what you're saying is, you know, that's part of the allure for coming after you. Thank you for calling in. Let's go west of the Rockies. Sherry, Modesto, California. You're on Coast to Coast AM.
Oh, hi, Dave, and Chris, and Carmen, and Andrea. It's wonderful to talk to all of you.
Wow, Sherry, I apologize for this. We're going to put you back on hold, see if we can clear your line up a little bit. You started off strong and then went into a deep echo chamber where we could not hear a word you were just saying. So we'll put you back on hold, see if we can clear that line up. Producers, let me know if we can bring you back on. Let's go to wild card line four, Cody in North Colorado. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi, Cody. What's your question for our guests this evening?
Actually, I mean, it's more of a comment. It's also okay. Kind of along the fellow from Texas's thing about, like, this idea of why are Christians being specifically targeted by these sort of entities. And I actually have a couple thoughts, theories that I'd like your idea on.
All right.
Sure.
So a lot of my education is in the field of anthropology. And I've noticed that, like, in shamanic traditions and mystical traditions, the symbols change, the names of an entity change, but what is consistent is the belief therein. I wonder if the belief is part of it because, I mean, I'm not saying it's a placebo effect because a placebo effect doesn't knock things off walls, but I'm wondering if it's actually the belief, the thought that's out there that causes maybe for this to be opened up more.
Well, if you're speaking to this, like the Statue of Liberty, is they call her Libertas now, but originally, if you follow that back from the different cultures, it was Isis, and so there's a spirit attached to it, and that spirit itself doesn't change, even though the name changes. Although, when a thing is given a name, it takes on that power, just like all the different names in the Hebrew, each name has a meaning, and it takes on that name, but I think as it transforms its name, it still keeps what it had in its previous name and picks up further definition by its name. Does that make
so
sense?
You think that there is power in the name is what you're, which is why we, you know, try not to bring
the
up
name, but in that spirit. He was talking about the spirit and it still being around. I think that if you're able to chase back to its origin, you know better what you're dealing with.
You know, I have a question. This, you know, people are so fascinated. Yeah, please, go ahead.
What I think he was saying is, does it require your belief for it to be healed? And in essence, it does, but it's all energy based. And if you do not believe, it's like a cancer patient. If they go into treatment and they don't believe they're going to be cured, they won't be. And that's true with the spirit realm as well. It does require belief. Did that answer your question?
I think we've lost him on the line. Let me go to another quick email. This is kind of a deep, heady question, but if we can get a quick, concise answer for you, we have about 3 to 4 minutes left here in this segment. Do any of your guests worry about when they die that the spirits that haunted them might be waiting for them on the other side? Does that ever cross your mind, Carmen?
Well, you know, that was a problem with my son, Philip, when he passed. And there for about 2 months, his spirit was coming back to me in fear, and I recognized his spirit, and I acknowledged it, and I advised him that his faith followed him to the other side, and that he needed to seek the light on the other side, because it was, and he did not have any further issues, and I do not fear the entities that tormented me here on earth, because I know that I will be received into the light.
Andrea, do you have any fear that the darker forces might be waiting for you when you finally shake this mortal coil?
No, I don't have any fear at all of anything at all. And it's, you know, to me, my personal philosophy is that everything is one thing and everything is existence. And I truly believe that I will simply transform into another expression of energy.
And so, no, I have no fear at all.
Here's a quick, and we'll ask you as well, Chris, and I think you're probably on the same boat as the ladies, but do you think that you'll ever have to face or go through that mix of the spirits that you've dealt with in the past before you move on?
Well, my hope and my belief is that I'll be with the Lord. But until the resurrection, you know, we're to be waiting for the resurrection. And then we enter in heaven, because that's when you get your resurrected body. And so, no, I'm not worried. I've got that faith that in salvation in Jesus Christ, and there's a place called Abraham's bosom where you, and there's a separation between those sort of things and a place of rest.
All right.
I'm looking forward to rest.
Yeah, I bet. If you like what you hear on Coast to Coast AM, and this is the kind of topic that intrigues you, from conspiracies to medical mysteries to the paranormal and beyond, then I suggest you check out George Norrie's TV show, Beyond Belief. You can check out beyondbelief.com. It's a high-speed streaming show. You can check out and see for yourself all the great topics that you hear here fleshed out in a much deeper form, beyondbelief.com. Take a visit and check that out for yourself. And you can find more information regarding George, his book, his programs, TV shows, paranormaldate.com, and the Insider Club by going to coasttocoastam.com. Coasttocoastam.com. That's the website to visit. When you become an insider, it's a one-year subscription price. It breaks down only 15 cents a day. You'll get access to all of the great content you hear on Coast to Coast AM. You'll get exclusive content, web content, live chats with George Norrie, the other hosts of Coast, and with some of the most entertaining and intriguing guests ever heard. So go sign up, become a member now, and remember, it makes a great gift for your friends and relatives that may have the same interests you do. Go check out Coast to Coast AM.com. And please do us a favor. We're right in the middle of our second Harvest Heartland Halloween for Hunger campaign. Help us by making a donation. You can go to darknessradio.com, darknessradio.com. Click on that banner for second Harvest Heartland Halloween for Hunger campaign. Every dollar we raise will supply 3 meals for neighbors in need right here in the United States. $1 equals 3 meals. You will be able to feed somebody for an entire day with what you have in your pocket change right now. All you have to do is visit darknessradio.com and click on that banner, or you can email me, dave@darknessradio.com, and I'll send you the links and information. Stay tuned. We have more with our guests, more of your phone calls and emails. When we return, I'm Dave Schrader, and this is Coast to Coast AM.